My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we're talking about Halo Wars, which is a real-time strategy game developed by Ensemble Studios for the Xbox 360 and PC in 2009.
Yeah, this episode was executive produced by Steven. Big thanks to Steven. We have upcoming Stevens as well. I feel like we shouldn't do last names on this, but if anyone's sponsoring and you would like us to say your last name for specificity, please tell me. I don't want to volunteer that just because we're rich in Stevens and I love it.
Yeah.
If you want to produce an episode, you can go to our Patreon store and executive produce an episode. We'll play the game and talk about it. Let's talk about, this is our second Halo game and we've only done Halo spinoffs.
Yep.
That's kind of a thing. I want to stake something in the sand because I never want to, you know, I don't want anybody to have any feelings about anything. I don't get Halo. The end. I wasn't here for this. I don't understand. To me, there is not a single original idea in this franchise.
Yeah.
I don't think this has anything to offer. Like this is this game specifically does. We'll talk about that. But as a property, I don't fucking get it. Like I don't click with Bungie. I don't understand their obsession with like just taking bits from other people's sci-fi and just being like, what if this as well? What if we also did?
Yeah.
With a unblinking military kind of like pro Earth that always feels like pro USA. Because it's always just, you know, white people who speak English.
Yeah.
As a thing. It's just like, what is here? What the hell is this? Like, it's going to be an interesting episode because I think there are two factors of this I think are really cool. We're going to talk about and we'll get into them. But I just want to lay that out in the sand because if there's something ephemeral about like Halo and its stees that you have a lot of affection for as a listener, just know I wasn't there for that. I don't share it.
Yeah.
So if there's some kind of ineffable that I'm missing, I miss, it was like downloading a Pokemon at a store. Like I missed that event.
Yeah.
I don't get surfing Pikachu. I just wasn't there at the time. I can't get surfing Pikachu.
Yeah. I get it. I really, really get it. All of my Halo nostalgia comes from playing multiplayer with my friends. The single player campaigns, like ODST is the only Halo single player campaign that I have finished. And that's because we did it for the show.
Okay.
The campaigns never really spoke to me. I, you know, never thought that the fiction or the stories or the,
you never like, read the books.
Visual design. Yeah, I never read the books. The idea of like how singularly awesome a Spartan is compared to any other soldier in power armor.
It kills me.
Yeah.
The reverence this has for a Spartan is so funny and weird and like 80s cartoon. It's like I'm watching the Centurions or something like that. Like it feels like it's from a different decade.
Yeah. This hit a lot of people specifically in my age cohort. And then shortly after, really, really, really hard. It was their first exposure to a bunch of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and it was in a very digestible package. I think that what we are seeing here is, you know, very established ideas having been around and expressed better, being packaged up and brought to console for a wider audience, yes, for whom all of those things become tagged specifically to that property.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
That first brought it to them.
Yeah. We're getting that with the genre here too, specifically, yeah, with, yeah, this. It's just, what if all of these very, very ancient sci-fi ideas just were played entirely straight?
Yes.
What if no subversion? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think there's a character in this that has more than one facet. Like, I don't think, in this game specifically,
yeah,
like, I don't, this, everything is played super straight.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most straight putt that's ever been putted.
Yeah. Like, you know, if you look at, you know, Halo 1, and you get that kind of here too, basically it's first person StarCraft, you know, it's almost, yeah, it's almost exactly that. And you know, a lot of the people that I ended up playing Halo with played StarCraft first. Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know,
so they saw all this stuff.
Yeah. They saw all this stuff and they still liked the Halo expression of it better because it was a fun, first person shooter they could play.
Yeah.
Specifically co-op as well. Yeah. It was faster. It was kind of like more accessible, more, you know, more reachable.
Yeah.
I have nostalgia for this property specifically because of that. Like, the Master Chief Collection has been dangling out there as kind of an attractive nuisance for me for a while just to fuck around with. You know, if it's on sale or whatever, I would have gotten it if it wasn't for like BDS, but yeah, like, yeah, just to relive the old days and, I don't know, play some multiplayer on Blood Gulch.
Yeah. Right. Like, I can, and to be fair, to like full disclose, I've never played any of the series multiplayer. I understand that is the wrong way to play it. You know, that's how I approach a lot of properties that people only like multiplayer. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you mentioned StarCraft. I love StarCraft.
Yeah.
I also feel like StarCraft is not very original. It just also came out in 1998.
It's just Warcraft, yeah.
You know, and it's also the sci-fi stuff in it, the Space Marines versus the aliens,
yeah,
versus,
yeah,
the high-tech race. Like, it just came earlier than this.
Yeah, what I meant is it's just Warhammer 40K.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Very, it's explicitly. All,
you, yeah, can always take things back to a thing.
Yeah.
You know, I recognize that. I'm not trying, mm-hmm, to say that, like, my version of that is hyper-original.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it's just, it really does depend on what you get exposed to.
It's the antibodies.
Some of these ideas.
We talk about, yeah, it. It's a very powerful idea, the antibodies.
Yeah, very, very powerful. We should do a dispatch on that. I think, yeah, that's a vocabulary term that has a lot going on, mm-hmm, that we have not expounded upon.
Yeah.
At some point. Anywho, this is, it's a prequel. It takes 20 years before Halo 1. And it is the story of the battleship, the Spirit of Fire, trying to stop the alien forces of the Covenant from getting hold of precursor technology, scratch your bungee bingo card,
mm-hmm,
that would lead to the destruction of humanity.
Yes.
And you control the United Nations Space Command.
Mm-hmm.
It's an overhead view because this is an RTS.
Yeah.
And the noteworthy thing, that one of the things I think is cool, this is the best consolified RTS that I've played, I think.
Yeah.
In terms of controls.
Absolutely. They thought long and hard about how to do this. And it shows, you know, like a console RTS, you know, design console first has been around for a while. See Herzog's, mm-hmm, Vi, see Warlocked.
Mm-hmm. Both of which are pretty great games.
Yeah.
You know, to be fair, they don't feel, but they both feel compromised in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Warlocked because it's on the Game Boy Color and Herzog's Vi because it's early, it's on the Genesis.
Yes.
And then, yeah, there are also RTS kind of ports. Like, mm-hmm, I played StarCraft 1 on the N64.
Yeah.
Not my original time, but I played through it that way. I played through Warcraft on PS1. They work.
Mm-hmm.
It's clunky,
yeah,
but you can do it.
Right.
Out of all of these things, this is the least clunky.
Yes. And that's because, like, they're not taking PC missions designed for somebody, you know, controlling with a mouse and keyboard. RTS has always they play like Photoshop to me. Mm-hmm. Like they play like a file browser. It's like, oh, this is how I, you know, add to a selection. Here's how I select all of a kind.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, shift, yeah, select kind of thing. That,
yeah.
from the other, as somebody who likes RTSs, and again, mm-hmm. like, cannot stress enough, I'm dog shit at them. I don't play them against other people.
Yeah.
But I like the experience of them. The way that they did this adaptation was to simplify it a lot.
Yes.
It is really, really stripped down. It controls great, but it controls great for me. The double edge of that is that it's through a much reduced scope.
Yeah.
And a lot more prescriptive mission structure in this. It's very streamlined. Mm-hmm. You know, it's this thing that comes up when people talk about games history and stuff. They'll talk about, oh, this is great. They finally streamlined. Oh, GoldenEye finally streamlined shooters for, you know, and they always are just, to me, as somebody who is not opposed to playing with a keyboard mouse, just a worse version of, like, yeah. What if you made a simple version of the thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This game lives alongside Civilization Revolution in my yes. mind. I'm more of a Civilization person. My kind of indifference towards RTSs and the, you know, mission design problems specifically that they have, they feel tedious to me in a huge way. Turn-based strategy I'm fine with, but like Civilization Revolution hit me real hard when it came to the DS.
Yeah. And I'm with you there, because Civilization is kind of too hard for me. Like, I can play it.
Yeah.
Obviously I played through Civ. I'm not a baby. Mm-hmm. So I'm not some kind of dumb idiot. I understand, how to play Civ, but I like Civilization Revolution because for me, that's a franchise where I like it being simplified.
Yeah.
You know, it takes all kinds.
Yeah. That's how I feel about this. I liked this quite a bit. You know,
I didn't hate playing it because mm-hmm. it's a snack.
Yeah.
You know, I did just think I could be playing StarCraft 2 or WarCraft 3 when mm-hmm. I was playing it.
Yeah.
They did this in smart ways, like very smart ways. The battles are smaller. Base building is extremely streamlined.
Yeah, that was that was the main bummer to me.
Yeah. One of my big pleasures in RTS is making a cool little town.
Yeah.
Like making a fortress.
Yeah. I want to set up an economy. I want to get those going. That's why I love the Anno games.
Yep. You're not doing it here.
Yeah.
The control scheme is kind of centered around quickly selecting groups of units, either on the screen or all units. If you like hearing all units, you will like this game. And then moving your viewpoint quickly around kind of points of interest that are chosen, you know, mm-hmm. either bases or active confrontations.
Yes.
For you.
And, you know, controlling your point of view, transiting between points of interest, it is hard. Like, that is yes. that is the hard thing about console RPGs. You know, like, if you're playing on a mouse and keyboard, you can just set hotkeys for particular areas.
Click the minimap.
Yeah. You know, like my first time, really the only time that I've played like a Command and Conquer game was on the N64 version. Mm-hmm. My uncle showed me how to play it because I was pretty young. And I was like, okay, yeah, no, I get this. But like, I don't know. I feel like I can't get where I need to fast enough. Right. People are dying because I'm, you know, trying to transit there. This very smartly solves that.
There's a really interesting way that like, you know, we all grew up on consoles, like mm-hmm. even people who, you know, played computer games from time to time. And the way that different magnitudes or like different axes of complexity were instant turnoffs,
mm-hmm.
you know, at the time for people. Like, I understand that. Like, there are people who, like, I'll watch like YouTube slop and people will talk about retro games. You know, and they'll talk about Super Nintendo and Genesis games and be like, I just wasn't, if I had to read the manual, this is just a bunch of reading and a bunch of stuff like that. I'm not going to play this. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's a fairly common attitude. I'm not saying that's what you're doing with this.
No,
it's a different kind of like, I don't want to fiddle with this.
Yeah.
Like the line in which something becomes fiddly mm-hmm. versus deep.
Yeah.
You know, or crunchy is very, it's like one of the more subjective things in the world. Like,
yeah, but you know. Very specifically, it felt like I was trying to like move a gallon of water from one bowl to another with a teaspoon.
Yeah.
Is a little bit what it felt like. Right.
It is a suboptimal way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, you think, you know, same thing. And as somebody who did a lot of those kind of experiences first in a suboptimal way,
mm-hmm.
Deus Ex or Maniac Mansion, you know, ways that are not the best way to play those,
mm-hmm.
but I still, the source material was good enough that I powered through and still ended up having affection for them.
Yeah.
My fiddliness line was slightly more, you know, mm-hmm. for that specific axis.
Yeah.
Other axes in which my fiddly line is more sensitive.
Yeah. The battles are smaller in this. Your unit cap is at like 30. You can increase that to a grand and spacious 40.
It's very expensive too.
With upgrades.
It's a late bit on the tech tree.
But this is meant to be, you know, handfuls of different kinds of units going into like little skirmishes with each other, and they kind of offset and consoleify this by having most of the units have special abilities that are on cooldowns.
Yeah, they have little little abilities they can do. They also have passive upgrades, you know, so there is a tech tree to this. It's very linear compared to some RTSs. And an RTS trope is rock, paper, scissors design. This happens in all RTSs, basically. I've never seen it quite as adhered to as this.
Yeah.
Because there's comparatively few units in this compared to RTSs. So, like, you have vehicles beating infantry, air beating vehicles, infantry beating air, the end.
Yep.
Of this. So, like, what that does to mission structure, again, in a way that feels like a snack but left me unsatisfied for an RTS, is that a mission might be, you don't know what's happening, going to happen in the mission. You play the mission and you see, oh, the enemy is just using tons of vehicles.
Yeah.
In this. Okay. Like, I just need to build a bunch of the cheap air unit and upgrade it. And that's just the key that unlocks it.
Yeah.
Like, when I talk about this having kind of a linear design, like a non-expressive like mission design, that's what I mean. There is not as much, there's very little room in this game, I think, for improvisation or coming up with tactics that were not intended that are still successful in this game. Which is something I see in other RTSs, and I can also see being a thing that's, you know, invisible to folk too.
I felt that there was a real order of operations that you get to a lot of the time. Most missions feature hero units. You have Sergeant Forge.
It's largely for God, this fucking guy.
This guy.
Leave the coffee on, girls. I'm coming back later. Keep my seat warm. Time to ride.
Gruff McNoflaws.
Yeah.
It's either him or a number of Spartans.
Who are all, I love that they gave them individual names, but if you're not attached to the Spartans as an idea, they just look like guys in power armor. I just had to believe they're the best guys in the world. And then they show that cutscene at the end where they just do a bunch of like sick ass moves. So why don't you just deploy 10 of these guys and just win the whole fucking thing?
But they're scary. Yeah. Their suit is sucking them off.
I know. That's why you can afford to deploy them. They're going to die happy.
Yeah.
You know, once they orgasm, they do a AOE.
when they blast, they blast, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then like all the Halo bad guys around them, all the Covenant around them die.
They're very, you know, durable. They can solo several units. You know, they're going to be kind of a core of whatever advanced force you put together. And if they're downed, they don't die. They just kind of recover slowly and can be revived if you move a friendly unit near them when they're at half health.
Yeah. They're not introduced as a playable unit for a while.
Yeah.
In the game. It's a late game kind of tech. You have, you know, this is the first thing I saw or saw first in StarCraft 2. You have special commands you issue from anywhere on the map from your ship, from the Spirit of Fire. And these are really good. One of the things that is a welcome ease of use thing, but is feels very contrary to setting up RTS economies, is a heal. Yeah. It's just capped on resources. Resources are not capped. It's just a trickle. Like, all you control is the rate of resources.
Yeah.
You do not control the number of resources you can possibly get. So on a long enough timeline, this kind of has a dragon questification. Like, you can keep all your units alive.
Yeah.
You just say, if you can defend yourself long enough to get those resources, you can just send down a healing beam. No problem. More interesting are like orbital blast and troop transports you can call in. And taking that thing that is ordinarily part of the build tree, you know, building transport ships and making it a special ability is actually pretty smart, because that is a bummer when you have to do that in Age of Empires or StarCraft.
Yes. Yeah. Smart decisions there. I often forgot to use these.
It is, I don't think the game does a good job tutorializing them in the single player campaign.
Yeah.
The game did not tell me about them. I was looking at a map, like the information on a map at one point, and the internet said, hey, make sure you can heal your eyes.
Yeah.
It's the one where you're protecting the drop ships that are taking off.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to see if the first one had to die. Whether that was scripted, it was. Yeah. But they said, you know, the first one has to die, but you can heal the rest of them. I'm like, fucking heal them. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? And then just like looked it up.
Yeah.
The biggest bummer to me in this, other than general mission structure, is the base building. Super simplified. You have, there are only specific places on the map they allow you to build a base. Mm-hmm. So you're not making a choice there. Your base has little, comes with like little slots.
It has like, it has bays.
Yeah.
Where different buildings could be raised up.
Yeah. So there's a mild amount of choice. Like there's sometimes a limited number of bays where you have to choose between making air vehicles or ground vehicles.
Yeah.
This to me is undermined by the fact that for every mission, there's a correct choice for that.
Yes.
You know, you get in the mission and you choose to bet on ground vehicles. That could either make this, you know, not impossible, but just like really, really, really hard where it's a piece of cake.
Yeah.
If you just build a bunch of hornets or whatever.
Yeah. And if you're scouting, you're going to find out what the enemy is using primarily before you reach the point where you can build up either the air training or the ground vehicle training. Yeah.
You, within these things, these buildings, you do defense turrets, and then you also make supply depots and reactors, which determine your tech level. Again, very simplified. Supply depots don't have a unit gathering anything. You're not choosing a place on the map. It just, this building creates units of value. And there's just the one resource for it. And then your reactor just raises your tech level. There's no contingencies. Like you have to have X and Y to get Z. Just this thing brings you to level 3 tech.
Yeah. The fact that resources are infinite is something that fundamentally changes this. Like you said, you know, there is a Dragon Quest kind of angle. You know, figuring out how to get as much value out of the resource nodes that you start with is like the interesting thing about an RTS to me.
Yeah, me too. And then also the need to expand. Mm-hmm. Like because of this being not about the volume of resources you can get, only the rate in which you can get them, there is an advantage to expanding, you know, and doing like satellite bases. It's to either have like a base head of operations or to just increase the rate so you can move a little faster. There are missions where you're under pressure and speed is important. You know, turtling is not always an option, but a lot of times it is. And then they introduce a vehicle that is a mobile base.
Yeah.
Like to kind of patch over this as a thing. There are little crates around that you can make your military guys go and take apart. Just as a thing, there's a little bit of that, but that more takes the place of like creep or wild animals in Age of Empire.
Yeah.
More, not creep, whatever they're called. The guys who are just hanging around in StarCraft or League of Legends. I can't remember what they're called.
Yeah.
The NPCs.
Yeah. No clue. NPC Sorry.
Resource monsters. Yeah. Somebody out there knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They're yelling right now. So there's a little bit of that. You can kind of jump the curve by making your idle soldiers do a little work for once.
And that kind of replaces the early game, like rush kind of stuff. You send them around looking, to scout. The tech level simplicity is a real bummer to me.
Yeah.
Like the fact that you can build these things at one and then these things at two. It's just like, yeah, okay, well, I just need to rush the resources to get those to get those reactors up and specifically upgraded as well.
It's not enough to me, the impact of having that tech level simplicity and then also having the layout simplicity.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is hard to understate. Like one of the great joys of an RTS is creating a very defensible home base. And when you do that, you're not only choosing the location of your base a lot of the time, not always, but a lot of the time, but you're also choosing where to put things for like defensive structures. Like I'm putting turrets at choke points.
Yeah.
Or I know where the enemy base is, so I know where to put an anti-air turret as a thing. Here, the turrets are always going to be stuck to your thing. Enemy, you know, your characters can just walk through your base.
Yeah.
No problem. There's no consideration of putting like lower value buildings on the outlands because if the enemy kills them, it's not a big deal. You know, things like that. Like there are a lot of decisions you are just not making in this.
Yeah.
You know, kind of underlining this, where somebody's specific, you know, pleasure point is for simplification.
Yeah.
You know, whether when something becomes more simple or you're like, thank goodness, I don't like fucking with that shit. This audience is made for people who don't like fucking with that shit.
Yeah, they want to order the little battles around. They want to kind of do the version of micro management that this allows on the actual skirmishes, right?
Yeah, and get to the oorah kick ass military next cutscene of General Granite being a hard man who makes tough choices.
Yeah,
the Covenant bases work different than this, but they are only available in multiplayer. Or skirmish matches. There is not a Covenant single player campaign in this, which means that if you want to play Covenant in multiplayer, you kind of have to train yourself.
Yeah.
RTSs are in that genre where the single player trains you for the multiplayer is the goal, even though I only play them single player. I played with the Covenant a little bit.
Okay.
In this, just to check out what they were like, but without a story, just doing skirmishes, it's not very fun to go directly into.
Yeah.
There's no direction.
Right. You don't get the, what this does actually very well, that, you know, good RTSs do, at least the ones that I've played do, is missions are, like each of them is kind of organized around a little star unit, you know, like, this is the medic's time to shine. Like that particular mission in StarCraft 2 is a standout for me, right?
Yeah. They want to teach you how to use these units for multiplayer.
Yeah.
You know, get what they are. The process of getting them and having there be kind of a right unit, it being like your key is not a highlight of this unit's time to shine. It's more like, for me, and this, you know, it's like, oh no, Hornets can solo this.
Yeah.
You know, it's not its time to shine. It's the key that unlocks this.
Yeah.
And I have to figure that out. And then once I figure that out, it's a super breeze.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a bummer that the Covenant does not have a story mode. My suspicion is that other RTSs, with the exception of ones where you literally play Nazis, tend to have a justification where that unit thinks it's doing the right thing, or that faction thinks it's doing the right thing. Halo is a very black and white morality.
Yeah.
There is not a lot of shade in the Covenant. And I can't imagine them caring about the Covenant's perspective enough to try to make the player care about it.
There is shade in the Covenant's perspective.
where does that come from? Because that comes from none of the games we've played.
That comes from Halo 2. I think in Halo 3, half of the missions are played as a Covenant elite called the Arbiter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, finally, the Arbiter's at it.
Yeah. I wanted to get that. It's not enough, but like it is there.
If it's there, they chose to do it a little bit later, like as opposed to when you play like the Zerg campaign, they immerse you in that mindset.
Yeah.
You know, as a thing that they would want. Bungie loves a precursor race that's controlling all other races.
Yeah.
And enslaving other aliens. It's their favorite idea. They use it for all of their games for some reason. I would not be surprised if it shows up in Viva Pinata.
That's rare. I was gonna say you need to get your Microsoft Studios straight.
I would be pretty surprised in that case. But it's what in terms of the games we've played and my reading about Halo that I've done to the degree to which I could maintain interest, it was just there's a big evil empire. And raw humans gotta go fight it.
Right.
Yeah. Go military.
It's kind of even more basic than that. It's just like, okay, a long time ago, it was the Forerunner and the Flood. The Flood was a huge threat, supposed to be the scariest thing in the universe. The Forerunners kind of created a failsafe to stop them from spreading. And then the Covenant started going around messing with Forerunner technology, not understanding that they would unleash the Flood. Same thing with humans. And then they end up uniting to take out the Flood, and then eventually the Forerunners,
like the Protoss stuff, uniting with the humans against the Zerg.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
basically
that's
the same
what
thing.
It is. Yeah, yeah.
The God, I don't like Halo. I respect so many people who love Halo. I just it feels like there's not an original idea that happens in this in a mile of it.
Yeah, I just wanted to rep it. I just wanted.
No. I appreciate that. I don't like getting yelled at or corrected, so I appreciate that.
Yeah.
The maps have collectible items in them as well. You can go around and get codex entries for the Halo timeline. And then skulls, one of the weirder named things in the Halo universe. These are modifiers. Mm-hmm. For some reason, they are called skulls. And they are also in this.
Yeah.
My main memory of skulls is being told after the ODST episode, you didn't really play if you didn't play with the skulls.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you had to play this on the hardest skulls with co-op, or it's not really the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. That's... Noted. Yeah. The skulls appear when you satisfy certain conditions. They're not just collectibles at a certain point on the map. So,
and I read about these. I did not enable skulls at this point because I didn't get the conditions, but some of them are interesting. Mm-hmm. My favorite thing about reading about the skulls in this is that there are positive and negative ones. They aren't just challenge modifiers a la like Hades. Mm-hmm. They're ones that make things easier in somewhat interesting ways, you know, and they affect your point total, but it kind of is almost like built-in cheat codes.
Yeah. You know, playing this to get the, you know, platinum rating or whatever it is, platinum rank on the missions and to like satisfy the conditions to get these skulls. Like that is the game, is beating the campaign once and then going through and trying to optimize.
Doing it for score.
Yeah, doing it for score.
A very console kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like that is very arcadey kind of console mindset to this.
Yeah.
Which, you know, again, it makes sense. Like that's the intention of it. That's not a dig. Mm-hmm. It's just a, you know, but it is what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
With this. I think that basically wraps up mechanics stuff. It's rock, paper, scissors with units and a mild amount of base building, except you don't choose to gather resources. You don't have to handle that part. It just does it. You make a little shed. Mm-hmm. It looks like a Halo game.
Yeah,
to this, they did a good job of visually translating the aesthetics of that universe. What was really interesting is that they had to, read in interviews, they had to make a lot of changes to this to make it feel right.
Yeah.
Like if you actually took the Warthog unit, the famous Jeep from Halo, this version is moving four times as fast and jumps three times as high to make it feel like it does in first person.
Yeah.
The perspective has a neutering effect on the values. So they had to tweak like everything to make it feel right.
Mm-hmm. And that's in addition to like trying their best to make things, to differentiate things, you know, while also keeping a unique visual identity for each of the factions, right?
Yes. Yep. On top of that, it does a good job of that. Like this does look like a Halo game.
Mm-hmm. Music's pretty good. I didn't expect it to be as dreamy as it is.
Yeah, it's pretty decent. Like, I agree. I liked it as well.
Yeah.
The story, you know, it being a prequel, but it retells the story of Halo 1, as far as I can tell.
it is almost exactly the same thing. Like
the plot of this fucking kills me, and it's largely because of the characters. Mm-hmm. If we still did sketches, we would 100% the sketches for this one would be about taking Serena and making her forget all previous instructions and shut the fuck up. The fact that they have a Marvel quip bot in their thing, that an AI that like controls her navigation, that is just going to be like, seems like a good idea to go into the blasted planet. I had no other plans today, I guess. Who just does shit like that and everyone tolerates her?
Yeah.
Is incredible. That's the biggest advance in humanity that they've had. I don't care about their spaceships. They've grown to tolerate like a Marvel hologram that lives with them and they're dependent on.
Yeah. Reassign her.
Yeah. Give me Am.
Yeah.
I will take any other AI than Serena.
Yeah.
And like nobody's amused by it. Like something, you know, they have to have some kind of toggle for this because it's AI, I imagine. There's like a lever. And everyone maxed it up to snark.
Yeah.
But nobody likes it. She makes jokes constantly, and everyone else is humorless to the extreme about all things.
Yes.
So you just have this one hologram going like, seems like a good day to die. You know, or is it like making a little quip or whatever, and everyone just ignores it. And I'm like, how are you, like, do you work at McDonald's? How are you ignoring the beeping that's happening at this all the time? The main character, Forge, is very funny. If you read about his bio, he loves his men so much that he's been put into the brig for insubordination to protect his men. Twice.
Oh my god.
Like it's very, you know, my only crime is caring too much, sir. You know, my biggest weakness is I'm a perfectionist, sir. And then Mr. Captain Man, the stoic captain guy, is
Cutter.
Cutter is like wet cardboard.
Yeah.
These characters fucking suck. Mm-hmm. There's nothing good here. Like the Arbiter is just a sniveling, angry guy who's like, yes, you'll see my face, human, as you die. Every line feels like a fucking generic bark from a fighting game.
Uh-huh.
I cannot believe this is the dialogue for this game.
Mm-hmm.
This story is horrible. That's wretched.
That's Halo, baby.
It's so heinous. There's nothing original or there's no spark. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely no spark in any of it.
Excuse me. There is 343 Guilty Spark.
Oh, I don't know what that. Let's shut up. I don't know what that means.
Gary, that is the sound of millions of people understanding something you don't. You're missing out, bro.
If we get millions of downloads on this, I vow to play through the Halo trilogy.
Okay,
for all millions of people.
Well, I mean, they're
listening to this specific episode.
Yeah.
Not all of our episodes in conglomerate or anything. we get a million listeners out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I'll also be ashamed of my worms and deans. There was nothing to, and like, I can handle a fairly generic story in this kind of thing. You know, there's a lot of, you know, dumb shonen tropes in Warcraft and StarCraft.
Yeah.
Specifically StarCraft II, the third part of it, the Protoss campaign, is real space melodrama and stuff. But you have Kerrigan, like you have like a gene engineer who's like trying to manipulate the genes of a thing. Like there's like a dark science aspect to it. There's a little bit more to grab onto. I'm not trying to say it's hugely complicated, but these characters are so fucking stock to my ears. I lost it. I could not handle people talking in this game.
No, it's pretty rough. The cutscenes look good though.
They look great. Like they look good. They look like Halo. Mm-hmm. They have a visual identity to themselves. Some of the action is really well blocked. That big fight scene I was talking about earlier, where they show you how cool Spartans are, is a well blocked fight scene.
Yeah.
You know, you're not playing it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like, this is what you have to pretend your little guys are going doing when they go pew pew next to guys. But like, it looked good. Like well choreographed. But in terms of actual story, I was grasping, like just absolutely gasping for straws. I was chewing the walls, trying to find a morsel of flavor in this.
Agreed. That's Halo. You know,
that's Halo, baby. The development of this was infamously troubled. It had a hand in ending Ensemble Studios. Ensemble Studios sucks. Some development details are pulled from reporting done from the book Blood, Sweat, and Pixels. For the Jason Schreier book, which has a whole chapter dedicated to this because it's an infamous story.
Yes. You know, Ensemble Studios, we covered Age of Empires 2 back in 2024, episode 428, storied real-time strategy developer.
Yeah. And IMO, one of the best values in gaming. Age of Empire 2. There's so much that comes with just out of the box. They were acquired in 2001, shortly before publishing their Age of Empires follow-up, Age of Mythology.
Acquired by Microsoft. I should have clarified there. Yeah.
And Age of Mythology is really cool, too.
I love Age of Mythology.
Yeah, it's real cool. If you want to be like deploy the Gorgon units.
I do.
In addition, like I do. I super do. It's real fun.
Yeah.
By 2004, they wanted to broaden their work as a studio away from the PC. So they started developing a real-time strategy game specifically for consoles, trying to solve this problem.
Yes.
RTS ports on consoles are clunky. They're not very good. And the number of ones that were made specifically for consoles that are good for that are on one hand.
Yes.
You know, as we mentioned, it is a very difficult thing to do.
Mm-hmm. So they spent like a whole year, like they modified a version of Age of Mythology to work with a controller, and they just tried to make it work, figure out what they needed to do to make it smoother, to make it, you know, less clunky. What they discovered is like you're working backwards if you're trying to do that. The actual game, the things that it is asking you to do, the framework of it, you know, needs to be made from step one with this control scheme in mind.
It's a really interesting way of saying basically that the controller dictates the terms of how complicated a game can be, like your control scheme.
Yeah.
And there are wildly complicated games on controller. Like there have been great strides in this even since 2009.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but for a long time, that was the truth of it. And that's why you ended up with, you know, you could play Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance on PS2, but you couldn't play Baldur's Gate.
Yes.
You know, because the input method controls the scope of complexity of the game. So instead of trying to translate, you know, making a good RTS game and making it for this, they had to say what kind of RTS game could extrude through a controller.
Right.
And how can we make that version the best it can be?
There were like advancements in this happening even concurrently with this as well. Like Battle for the Lord of the Rings RTS Battle for Middle Earth 2 is really highly regarded, and that came out on the Xbox 360 in like 2006 or something like that.
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, a lot of like Radio Menu kind of stuff that this does, but that was a PC port, and it wasn't, you know, this approach.
Yeah, it wasn't the game itself was not simplified.
Yeah,
for it.
Mm-hmm. So they wanted to make their own thing with this, deciding we gotta do this from the ground up. They started development on a real-time strategy project for consoles called codenamed Phoenix. And then they decided that's not enough. We need to have an MMO codenamed Titan and a Diablo clone codenamed Nova. And these would share a universe. They were really trying to break out of we are just the Age of Empires studio.
Yes. Yeah. The development was well underway, and Microsoft said, we don't want anything to compete with Halo. What mm-hmm. if you made it Halo? The MMO project would also change to Halo. Halo subsumed all, like the Flood. And everyone hated this. Microsoft was under the illusion that Ensemble could just use Halo assets raw, even though it's a totally different perspective. That's real dumb. Ensemble did not want to abandon their IP, and Bungie felt like their series was being whored out. The precious, like, only we can do this precursor race bullshit. It's so original. How could anybody, like, you could accidentally copy Halo. But they were just like, no, our thing, our vision is special.
They had not let anybody else touch the franchise up to this point. When it happened, everybody involved was like, no, thank you. Except for the executives. Men. Yeah.
The mammon worshipping shitheads.
Who ended up being so unhappy with it that they closed the studio. For doing the thing they asked them to do.
Great job, douchebags.
Yeah.
Healthy industry. Back in 2009.
Never let your company get bought.
Yeah. Never let your company get bought. And there's a little lesson here in Ensemble, which is like rapid expansion is almost always the first thing that happens before something dies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's I watch like a bunch of
Company Man,
Company Man, or like Weird History Food YouTube slop. And whenever it's like, oh, what happened to Boston Market, it's always an aggressive expansion. Not even like 9 times out of 10, it's 10 times out of 10. Aggressive expansion is what kills companies.
And Ensemble was well down that road. The hubris.
Like, just stay in your Age of Empires. You could be still making Age of Empires now and be very happy.
You know, you could have done Age of something sci-fi.
I don't know, Age of anything. Yeah. Age of spaceship. So Bungie was working on Halo 3 at the time and did not want to divulge information about the game to an outside studio.
Yeah.
Pretty funny. Additionally, Ensemble had to run every detail by Bungie.
Yeah.
And this added a year to production time. Bad on the money men. Yes. They did get a hold of art and assets that Bungie had used for a Halo movie pitch. They could not use the actual Halo assets because they were wrong perspective and everything, but the movie pitch ones were in 3 dimensions.
Yeah.
And they could use them from above.
Yes. And they had to create more units because, like, hey, Halo does not actually have enough things in it to cover every strategic possibility that you would need for even the most bare bones RTS.
Yes. Right? And they wanted to make Spartans the coolest. Like, they had fully bought into this idea that Spartans are the coolest thing in the universe.
Yeah.
They wanted to make them the coolest units in the game. So they gave them what they thought was the coolest ability, which this is cool.
Yeah.
They can hijack vehicles.
Yes.
That is sick. It's fun to do.
Fun to do in the game, in the first person shooter game, and fun to do here.
Yeah. Not done in the first person shooter game that I can recall. I do like it here.
Yes.
They were going to make the Covenant a playable in a campaign, but this was cut for time through this. And they also thought about making the Flood a playable race in multiplayer, but they scrapped it because they realized this is StarCraft.
Oh no, guys. Sorry, we made a StarCraft.
Yeah, we actually, oh shit, we made 90% of a StarCraft, but we can't do that last 10%.
Check out my original song, and it's the melody to the Meow Mix commercials.
Yeah, exactly. But one slightly different note. that clip of Vanilla Ice going, no, our song goes dun 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 dun. the Flood are supposed to be the scariest thing in the universe in this world. You could not do that and have it be a playable campaign.
Right.
They needed to have an air of mystery.
Microsoft didn't even let Ensemble finish the game.
Nope.
Nope. They decided, hey, this studio, you're putting too many resources into this MMO you want to make. We just need Halo Wars out. And they closed. They closed Ensemble, cutting them down to like a skeleton crew to finish out the game. And then a smaller crew to stick around and support it post-launch.
Yeah. Halo Wars reviewed pretty well. This shows up in the 7 to 8 out of 10 range. Mm-hmm. 80 on Metacritic. Most of the criticisms are my criticisms of this, that the game is shallow.
Yes. The sales were middling. It did not do as well as Halo 3. I don't know what could. It's like 16% of Halo 3's first week sales in the first week. Still charted number 2 behind Killzone 2. Yeah, I don't know if you've even Killzone is scoring points off of you.
If you've ever seen Killzone 2's butt, you know it's great to be behind Killzone 2. Halo 3 was such a huge deal. Like, yeah. I was, you know, not super plugged into gaming at this time.
The game's so big, it changed Mountain Dew.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this and Ensemble's closure made a sequel to this, very unlikely, but Microsoft worked Creative Assembly and made Halo Wars 2 for the Xbox One in 2017. I think people also like that.
Yeah, people do like it. Gary, I had no idea this existed until I did the research for this. The Xbox One was such a black hole.
Yeah. I know more people have seen UFO than on Xbox One.
Yeah.
But it is a thing where, like, looking at it, I was like, oh, I wonder if they improved some of the stuff. Not enough to like run out and grab it, but I would believe if people were like, oh, it's a lot less shallow.
Yeah.
A cool thing here is the diaspora of people who formed after Ensemble's closure produced two different series of note. Titan Quest, which is a good Diablo-like with different theming. And then a game that I have a lot of affection for, which is Orcs Must Die.
Yeah.
Kind of
big,
a
big series. Yeah.
It's a weird pet affection for that. At some point, maybe I'll toss that layup into the show. Like, in terms of a tower defense in which you're also actively participating in it.
Yeah.
It's real fun co-op.
Mm-hmm. I believe
that. Yeah. It's good.
Also out of the diaspora was Words with Friends.
Real hard pivot.
Yeah.
Real left turn. I also like abbreviating Orcs Must Die as OMD, because then I think it's the band. Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. Let's get into it. Let's get this gripping story of hard men who have to make hard choices and the AI who jokes them on the whole way. Plus a lady without a personality that I can discern.
Yeah, plus a lady who is there to do research.
Yeah. Her personality is science.
Mm-hmm. We get an opening cinematic about this 5-year battle to recover this planet called Harvest from the Covenant. They had taken this over, you know, of course that's all Harvest is these days. It's hell down there, but it's ours now.
It's weird. This is a thing that I don't have tons of specific examples of, because these levels kind of run together for me, if I'm being honest, but I think it's a general thing that's true of the tone of this is that narration wise and in the story, this takes the military, it's very, kind of reverent. Yeah. Of the military, you know, and soldiers' lives, you know, really matter.
So it's jingoistic. Yeah.
It's jingoistic. In the way this expresses during play is whenever they need to show a new enemy unit, a vehicle will dum-da-da-da-dum-da-dum out in the middle of nowhere for no reason, just to get killed.
Yeah.
It happens constantly. So when he's like, it's hell down there. And then we cut to scenes where it's just like, we show three guys run up into the middle of a field just to get shot by something to show that it's serious. Like, this is simultaneously wants us to care about the lives of individuals and also treats them like dirt.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to mention, this is I'm sorry to go back in generalities after the opening. I'm kind of all over the place today. Is that this is in the book of games that are use a series as a libretto.
Yeah.
It's the other interesting thing about this. We are in the Chocobo's Dungeon.
Yes.
Phase. So this is a thing where, in addition to consoleifying an RTS for Halo players, it's also saying, here, you semiotically know what this look is just by looking at it.
Yeah.
You know what a Spartan is when we say that. We don't mm-hmm. have to learn about that. You know what a Warthog is by when we say it.
Yeah.
It fulfills a similar function. Mm-hmm. The idea of a series or a property being used as a libretto something for something is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
I've always kind of liked that in a game. I think it's a neat reason to do side stories.
It's really smart. And it is, like, I think, the argument for why did this need to be licensed as opposed to being its own original thing. Right.
It's a different advantage. Like, it could be an original thing and have a much better story. And mm-hmm. that would be, it would be value. But one of the advantages of this is that it's easy to digest on multiple levels. And one of those is that you know what these things do.
Mm-hmm.
If you played the series.
Yeah. You know, roughly the threat level of these Covenant enemies, you know, grunts versus the snipers versus the elites.
Yeah. There's also an element of this that of certain kinds of sci-fi, I find, that will launder jingoistic ideas.
Mm-hmm. See Mass Effect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I felt that about Mass Effect too. Like, when you replace the United States with Earth,
mm-hmm.
But you make it effectively the United States,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, there aren't people from other cultures in this. It's all kind of homogenized into Earth.
Yeah.
Or, into the United States. Like, everyone speaks with an American accent in this.
Yeah.
It allows people to, I think, feel like, without feeling anything, be really, really rah-rah military
mm-hmm.
About something. And this just has all the tropes of, like, Americans, you know, in a war
mm-hmm.
Is what this feels like. They just made it not that.
Yeah.
You know, but it has the same kind of arcs and beats of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, just interesting stuff that occurred to me while I was playing this.
Yeah. But this, you know, it reveals this is 20 years before the Halo event. Pretty big deal. Stuff mm-hmm. was pretty different. And we see Commander Cutter looking down on Harvest from his command ship, the Spirit of Fire, the fucking names of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big time.
The humans naming their ships the dumbest things, and the Covenant naming their ships the dumbest things.
It's a dumb universe.
Yeah.
The whole universe has been soaked in dumb juice.
Yeah. I pilot the High Charity. Okay.
Yeah. Well. Cool. His crew is giving updates about the Covenant, and they're looking for something inside the ice. I hope they brought a coat. Shut up, Serena. Cutter thinks that this could be the key to the whole war.
Yeah.
And we start our first mission here, Alpha Base, where Serena says very sarcastically that Sergeant Forge needs to retake Alpha Base.
Yes. And Forge is our hero unit here, and he's inside of a Warthog.
Yep.
And then when the Warthog is destroyed, he runs around on foot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Interestingly, the Warthog, in this sense, it is a transport vehicle primarily, is not an offensive vehicle until it gets some upgrades
mm-hmm.
As a unit.
Yeah.
And it can just run over things, but it's running over things on a cooldown.
Mm-hmm.
I love the idea of a car doing that. Like, I don't know. Like, I just did when I'm full.
I got to clean these other guys out of my grill. It's a whole thing. Yeah.
So we wind along this, like, kind of long road rescuing groups of Marines.
Yeah.
You know, when we get up to them, they get under our control. And we assemble a crew to get to the walls of Alpha Base. And you introduce a mechanic that is not actually reused very often during mm-hmm. this, but it seems like it's going to be, is there's an energy wall that Marines can go through, but vehicles can't.
Yes.
So sometimes you're going to have to send people in through an energy wall to shoot a generator.
Yeah. And this is teaching you how to, like, separate, how to select just a particular kind of unit.
Yep. Yeah. We get in there and then we clear out the Covenant. And air support destroys the Covenant tanks that are here. Mm-hmm. And this takes us into Mission 2, Relic Approach.
Yes.
What a name.
So Forge is looking down from a cliff on this Covenant dig site. They're opening this door to whatever this relic is. And then we, you know, see what the Covenant are doing. The Arbiter, this high-ranking Covenant elite, the guys with the kind of squid mouths, mm-hmm. This is like the leader. Sorry, Arbiter's a different thing. He's
Leaders and around, Arbiters are different.
Yeah, yeah. He's floating around in a floating throne kind of deal. He's saying, like, oh, he's got his little pet elite here. He was worried about the infection getting to the relic. Like, they know about the flood.
Yes.
You know, as I care not for your little life.
I don't want to hear the end of any sentences.
Yeah.
I'm acting like this this archetype in the military, even though I'm an alien. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to act like an alien. On the ship, a scientist named Anders insists on going to the planet's surface, and Forge hates this.
Yes.
Forge really cares about Anders, but I've never seen it. Two people share less dialogue together or have less chemistry.
Yeah.
Cutter says he's going to pull her out of the first sight of danger. Cutter is such an ineffectual leader here who goes along with everything his advisors say. Uh-huh. And basically it's the disciplinary board from Chicanery.
Uh-huh.
Cutter okay, we'll allow it. We'll allow it, but you're on thin ice. That's all Cutter does the entire time. Mm-hmm. No, you're right. We'll do it. But the second anyone's in danger, we're done.
Well, like,
he says it about everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Just, hey guys, remember I'm here. All right, yeah. Go ahead.
I'm here to softly back you up every step of the way, Commander. but we can't leave Alpha Base until we rebuild enough of it to end this lockdown here. So this is our base building tutorial, essentially.
Once you get enough to stand up an economy here, the huge door, we need to get to the huge door that the Covenant opens at the far north of the map.
Yes. Yep. On our way out, we're attacked by jackal snipers. These guys are up on little platforms. Mm-hmm. And they're tough. Yeah. Also, other tough units will kind of come through. It's a little tricky. And it's teaching us about another mechanic that, again, I felt like only showed up a couple of times.
Yeah.
Which is getting into cover. There are certain objects on the map that will have little slots for your dudes.
Mm-hmm.
This is a wrecked pelican. One of the things that's frustrating about it is that if you, let's say you have, there are 10 slots and you order 5 dudes into it, mm-hmm. you cannot order 5 more dudes into it.
Yeah.
You then have, you had to undo the 5 dudes, put them together with 10 dudes, and then have them all get into it together.
Right.
Nobody
wants to shuffle around. I already, my coat's on this other seat.
Yeah, I'm already here. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm saving those seats. I need a place for my bag. This is a console simplification.
Yeah.
Thing. They need to make this a binary thing. Mm-hmm. It either has a load of soldiers or it doesn't, and the load it has is the same.
Yes. Yeah.
Frustrating. Mm-hmm. Along the way, there's a Covenant base. Taking it out is optional, but if you do so, it lets you build a forward base, which might be nice and increases the rate of your resource curve.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, your new units can start up closer. If you want to, and again, operating in this limited space, that is available to you. You reach the doors, and you get kind of like a little curveball thrown. There's this huge detonator, that the, Covenant are going to use, and you have to destroy it before it goes off or else the mission fails. Like you'll be sealed out of whatever this, underground facility is.
Yeah. You blow it up. Not too difficult. These early missions are pretty easy.
Yeah.
And the game does get hard a little bit in the back half. It's always straightforward, but it gets a little bit harder.
Yeah.
The mission ends after you destroy the detonator. Anders is sent down. And Anders immediately touches the glowing orb.
Yeah. Because you never touch the orb.
Yeah. No one's smart in this game. Mm-hmm. This causes a huge projector to light up and show a map of the galaxy.
Yeah. Halo 1 ass story beat. Like, oh, we, the big goal being a map to something valuable.
And then again, just this game having kind of a lead you by the nose, like Dead Space 2 feelings for me, mm-hmm. in terms of just kind of going from whatever would be the most dramatic thing to happen in a movie. Mm-hmm. Elites are already there.
Yeah.
They were down there with us. They've just been waiting for this exact dramatic moment to uncloak and attack. Mm-hmm. Like, why? I don't know. They could have stopped us from getting this information. It wouldn't feel as cinematic, though.
Right.
You know, part of what makes this feel less like a game and more like a series of kind of set pieces and being dragged from one to another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say what we just did was hearsay, and Alpha Base can't send reinforcements. But the Spirit of Fire does, and it sends down Grizzly Tanks. And this is our Grizzly Tank highlight mission.
Yeah.
Where the first part of the mission is we just have to get the Grizzly Tanks to Forge and Anders. They'll hold out what seems like indefinitely mm-hmm. as we drive very powerful tanks to clusters of guys.
Yeah. They will just occasionally radio, get off your ass and get to us. We can't hold out much longer. You look at their health and it's like full.
Yeah, 95%. just shooting rubber bullets at each other the entire time.
Yeah.
Grizzly tanks are great. They're really strong. Mm-hmm. They have a special ability to shoot like super missiles.
Mm-hmm.
That's on a cooldown, so you can kind of open with that.
Yeah.
Very useful.
Mm-hmm. You know, focus down like the strongest unit in an enemy or, you know, bring down like a building that they're supporting.
Yep. Sniper platforms and stuff specifically was nice for.
Yeah.
When we reach them, the Marines join up with the tanks. So everybody's together and Anders can repair the Grizzlies.
Yes.
Good.
You only get Anders as a unit in like 2 missions.
Yeah. But like you can heal them with magic space gas as well.
You can.
The healing aura you can do heals cars as well as humans.
But not both.
Yeah,
it would turn humans into cars and, much more upsettingly, cars into humans.
As far as I know, that is what has happened. Truck birthday, honk, honk, beep, beep. Got a birthday cake made of gasoline. That's not a Gary bit. That's from County Bang Bang Thing.
God damn it.
I know. I wanted to let you know because I don't want to steal valor.
All right.
It's the worst thing you can do, Commander. But I should share that clip for with you. It's very funny.
Okay. All right.
When we go to leave, grunts blow up the hollow bridges. I already did all my tight five on how much I hate grunts in the ODST episode.
Yeah.
And this means we have to go to the other bridge. We defend Anders for a minute while she hacks the bridge generator, and we fight to the main entrance. There are enemies in front of us. There are enemies pressing in from behind. Not too hard, though. Again, we just have a bunch of grizzlies.
They
take out everything in this. There's no air units to fuck them up.
It is neat. It's like, okay, well, if you try to turtle on this, you're going to die. Like, infinite dudes are coming in from behind. Like, you just have to plow forward, and eventually you meet reinforcements. Who, you know, will stop them from chasing you while you get to the landing zone. It is a neat way to do this kind of chase scene in an RTS.
Yeah, they want to push you forward through this. This is not a thing where you can just get unlimited resources and heal because you don't have a base in this. At the entrance of the facility, there are a bunch of hunters that wait, but reinforcements show up. So all we need to do is get to this landing zone to get Anders out. We do this, we go to the next mission, Arcadia City.
Yeah.
Here.
This is the first difficulty bump.
This is, Anders gives a report on what the relic showed her. It was the Arcadia Star System, which is currently a resort colony. Cutter wants to stay on Harvest, but relents because Anders insists because Cutter is that kind of commander.
No, we can't do that. But what if I really want to? Well, okay.
Very well. But the first second it gets bad, I'm pulling out. We arrive in Arcadia, and it's in the middle of a battle. The Covenant has invaded, and there are a bunch of command ships, including the Pillar of Autumn, taking a bunch of damage. There are Spartans on the ground to protect them, and there are different cities. We had to start like protecting a little evacuation zone, and there's going to be people trickling from one end of the map to the other to these cargo ships on the northern side of the map the entire time. Yeah. Evacuees will get stopped and be shot by things. We have 20 minutes until launch. We need to protect the cargo ships here. This is a thing where the trick is Hornets. Hornets do it. If you have Hornets, then get anywhere they need to be really fast. They'll take everything out.
Hornets are your basic flying unit, is what these are. This is a big scramble. If you are trying to, if you're doing two things, if you just have one murder ball that you're trying to roll around, you can't protect everybody.
Yes.
You can't get where they, can't get where they need to go in time. So you need to split up forces, and the Hornets are the key because they can move very quickly.
Yeah, unless they're Hornets. You can have a murder ball of Hornets and they will get around just fast enough. And there are also Spartans near all these ships that can hold their own for quite a while. And then you can heal the ships, which again, I did not realize I could send down a healing thing. The first ship dies automatically. It is just it panics and takes off.
I did restart.
Same, because I was like, when I talk about this being a series of set pieces rather than a game, like, something where I'm like, unleashed with these systems, this is one of the things I mean. Like, it thought that would be cool for the story.
Yeah.
So it has to show this character doing something very silly.
Yeah, it was pretty funny because, it's like, okay, well, I have to protect three things and one of them is down. That has to be bad for the mission, right? Yeah. So then I rushed all my units, to get there, first, because maybe it's just poorly communicating what I need to do. There's no enemies around. Then the cutscene starts and they're surrounded by enemies.
Yeah, they're surrounded by enemies and he's got half health and he's taken off. Like, he could be in a healing mist, or it doesn't matter because it's just what the game wants to have happen. The other thing is we're in several missions in a row now where I'm not, like, making a base and attacking a map. And I understand why it's doing that. It wants to be focused on these little individual action set pieces. It's one of the ways in which by making an RTS, they kind of didn't make an RTS.
Yeah.
In this, like, the missions don't have the rhythms of an RTS.
Right.
The fact that I'm doing this kind of juggling these three zones and moving my guys all around, it's like I wanted a break in the action to do RTS shit. And it kind of were not. you know, and that can be a good thing or a bad thing depending on your perspective on that stuff. Like, I like turtling up in a base and making a murder ball quite a bit. That's trying to discourage you from what I'm sure they consider to be degenerate gamer behavior. It's just degenerate gamer behavior, which I like doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could not do. We got to get two bases to create enough hornets to protect them. If you have hornets, you're basically fine. Once you have them.
Yeah.
At this point. It's up to you. There's a optional goal for protecting evacuees. So you can have units kind of babysit them as they walk through. Eventually I stopped doing that because I decided I didn't care about optional goals and just mostly had my people by the escape ships.
It'd be a lot easier if you could set up patrols. Like, this is something you could very easily do in a PC, either just by like setting waypoints for them to move back and forth, or just putting them on guard or patrol. Like, you just follow these units and kind of things. Can't really do that. It's a weird objective to throw in.
Not enough buttons on the controller.
Yeah.
So the Covenant eventually will kind of set these heavy laser turrets if you don't stop them from doing it. That's a big deal. And they're going to keep attacking it. It scales up in difficulty as it goes.
Yeah.
You just have to get one cargo ship out.
Yeah. I only got one out.
Once I figured out the Hornet key, I was able to get both of them out.
Yeah.
The first, you know, time I did not, but then eventually Hornets. This brings us into Arcadia outskirts. The Covenant have pushed us out of the city, but there's a defensible position for a base inside of a blast crater. This one is interesting because it starts with us being chased by Covenant and fighting back at all just kills you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You will be overwhelmed. Again, it has something it wants you to do. The ability to do something else exists within the gameplay, but it doesn't exist within the possibility space.
Right.
It is sacrificing expressiveness for cinematics. The story here is you get chased to a place to make a stand.
Yes. And the kind of like standout feature for this is garrisoning units in cover, right? Like, you're in this, you're in this crater, and a way that you, defend it better, just build Marines to go and, you know, put there. And then like the cover goes like pretty far out until you're almost like right next to another base that you can take.
It's very funny. It's like they crashed, ships strategically in a circle around this base.
Yeah. Forming what we call a land reef.
It's a land reef. It's very Bermuda Triangle. Like, anytime you go into the circle, a plane crashes. This is the first time in which I really started working on turrets, and the turrets upgrade in mutually exclusive ways, which like points for having a strategic decision.
Yeah,
in this, they can be, you can choose whether they are rock, paper, or scissor turrets, essentially, which I like.
Yes,
that I had to make those choices, so I had to pay attention to what direction maybe air units were coming into my base and make that an anti-air turret.
You're also fine just leaving them unspecialized and then upgrading them.
It's not that rigorous, but I liked that there was a tactical decision to make. While this is happening, the Covenant starts building this big plasma cannon near the base, but we can send our units out to stop it, and this gives us a second base, which is good. And we just keep kind of building up and pushing out. And when the Omega Spartan team arrives, we team with them to destroy the Covenant base.
Yeah.
Even within this game, the Omega Spartans are actually cooler than we are.
Yes. Yeah. It's just a win. It's just a win button here.
This brings us into the mission Dome of Light. The Covenant have put up a dome plasma shield around a site near the city. We fire our own plasma shell at it, but that does not work. It just brings a bunch of attackers at us. So we have to get a bunch of plasma rhinos. it sounds a lot cooler than it is.
Yeah.
The rhino tanks with plasma cannons.
It's a Mega Man X boss.
Mega Man X. I remember getting plasma shield. I was expecting it would be a projectile. A little disappointing. And we have to get these plasma rhinos in to fire at once. The plasma rhinos just come in through a gate.
Yeah.
You just kind of have them.
You can only have one of them under your control at a time.
Yeah.
When you get them to the position, they like technically are switched to a neutral, to a neutral army.
I love that you have hot and cold running plasma rhinos. You just have a little, they put down a specialized gate that just shits these things out.
Yeah. This is hard. I found this to be a really hard fight. Cause you have to, get your troops to these positions where the rhinos need to be set up, clear it, and then hold it.
Yeah. And you want to, the game, the NPC is not that aggressive about attacking places you've already held, but they, it does seem like it happens from time to time. So you need to build up forces enough to protect them as well.
Yeah. You have to have like five positions held by the end of this. And if one of them gets destroyed, you can just send another one out, but it'll take a little bit.
Yeah. It costs you time because we're in Dragon Quest mode. Like this is the first one where I increased the population cap because I had time to do it.
Yeah.
Because I just sat back and gained resources. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like this is on a long enough timeline, you will win it, but it is hard.
Yes. Yeah.
You have to replace these rhinos. You have to defend your base because they will just keep fighting. Turrets are really huge here.
Yeah.
And once you get them in place and the shield goes down, you get a bunch of orbital blasts, which you can use to destroy the base with.
Yeah.
Which is kind of move the cursor over there. And this moves over to a mission called Scarab where this Covenant leader named Regret consults with an arbiter who's furious. He's being sent in to search the ruins. And Regret says, the war with humans requires reawakening as much old technology as possible. So he sends the arbiter to kidnap Anders. They have a scientist and we don't have a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to go grab an Anders.
It's very specific. The Covenant cannot activate these things. Only a human can.
Yes.
I do not know why.
Because it wouldn't be dramatic without it.
Right.
The human forces get down around where the light dome was and an incomplete Scarab walker starts attacking. We can't run or advance. So we have to destroy it. So we have to hunker down behind a wall. I like this mission a lot.
This is really fun.
I think this is great. Your base starts behind a little wall, but if you peek out, the Scarab head will start tracking it with a laser and annihilate anything it sees.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to hide behind ruins to block the beam. You can also slow down its tracking, like the speed at which it turns by destroying these power centers hooked up to it. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
You basically have to build up and make a bunch of scorpion tanks to be your main offense. They're fast and they hit hard to take out those power centers and to make your way up to the Scarab eventually.
Yes.
All while you're being kind of harried by the Covenant.
Yeah.
I like the way this mission's designed.
Yeah. This is cool. Stealth and RTSs done before, but like I've not seen one quite like this. It felt very fun building the momentum by going out and targeting those reactors to slow it down.
Yeah. And you, because this is a game with unlimited resources, is the only way this specific thing would work, because once you lose a tank, you've just lost it.
Yeah.
You just have to wait for resources to come back up, and the Super Scarab's head will kill anything in one hit and it'll do it in a line.
Yeah.
The controller, as much as this, you can select all units pretty well. It's actually not very good for micro moving for like dodging.
Right.
In this. And even doing it with the mouse, it's pretty tricky to do this. So like you will lose tanks.
Yeah.
Or lose your little vehicles here. So you have to be able to kind of repopulate through this, but it's fun. It's fun and creative.
Yeah.
This brings us to the next mission, Anders' Signal, here, where Anders and Forge pick around this marsh looking for it. And the Arbiter, who has a Predator, he looks like a Predator and has Predator technology because there's not an original idea in Halo, grabs Anders and uncloaks.
Yeah.
He's about to kill Forge. Anders says, no, I'll go with you willingly if you let me live, or if you let him live. And then he just grabs her by the throat and drags her backwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I had to live. Uh-huh. Like, even to you, I had to live. Why are you doing it this bad?
Yeah. 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 You really don't understand what's going on here, bud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is no good. Mm-hmm. They have our Anders. Her transponder is heading out across the border, and we have to chase it. Of course, the captain doesn't want to do this, but the AI and Forge convinces him to. So we do this to keep her alive. And we end up this planet that's giving some crazy readings.
Yeah.
Serena, the snarky AI, is like, we're orbiting a planet in, well, I'm still working on that part.
Mm-hmm.
But it is giving some crazy readings.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be more specific than that. You're fucking AI.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah. What are conditions on the surface? Fucked up, yo.
It's not crazy down there. No, but can we breathe? AI, I'm like so close to defragmenting you. It's not even funny. You are getting reset to factory settings.
Yeah.
Alexa, please die. So we start this mission, just Forge in this mobile base called the Elephant. I don't really like the Elephant game. I want to make bases and stuff. This does feel like the actionification of this, having a base I can move around constantly.
Yeah.
Like this, like having that be a variant or something you do with a cost, like in an RTS, just being there. Sometimes there's going to be missions where basically you have an elephant for a large portion of it.
Yeah.
Not crazy about it. The Elephant is a mobile base that can spit out Marines.
Yes. It gives birth to them.
It does.
Yeah. It's like that scene in Ace Ventura 2.
Very similar.
So we think this is going to be a mission about fighting brutes, you know, Covenant, kind of like melee unit. That's a big deal in the games. But we find out that these other elephants are being held down by something that they can't identify. It's the Flood. Like you see, like the Zerg creep and stuff around here, right? Making this the third time that first contact was made with Flood in the Halo series.
These guys don't talk to each other.
Nope.
It's a first time for this specific crew.
Yeah.
But every single time it's a first time for somebody.
Yeah. And like, you know, these people survive. Like they can report to everybody else. Like, hey, there's this really scary, like creeping crud shit.
Yeah.
They're like, there are goo men. Yeah. But it's a surprise when it happens in Halo Reach. And it's a surprise when it happens in the original Halo.
It just didn't seem important.
Yeah.
Like this is not the kind of thing that's important. The important thing is honor, going to the brig for your troops. Mm. Oorah. And then, those
Spartans.
Are the important things.
It just says Spartans here.
Yeah. Really, really cool. Like, because they tell you that's really cool.
Yeah.
So we get the ability to build a base and we had to send troops out to destroy, these Flood moats that are holding, elephants captive.
Yeah.
Through here. Flood enemies, you know, seem to have a chance to turn your units when they die. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. They're also the first and only real use I found for the flamethrower units, which are anti-infantry. Mm-hmm. Not that useful in the actual game because they had to get pretty close to stuff. Like putting a couple of them in your where you're bivouacked in a thing is good because they'll keep things that you'll hurt things that get close.
Yeah.
But having a crew of them is not that useful.
Their special ability is a flashbang, which is like a stun that helps. Mm-hmm. It's actually a pretty wide AOE, but yeah, they were very fragile.
Yeah. But good here because they will just melt through the Flood. Once we free all the elephants, we have to get them back to the base. Yeah. Not the coolest name for a mobile base.
I like that song. Yeah. Reminds me of elephants.
Yeah. This starts a map called The Flood. Here, maybe the world is in love again.
Literally just the name of the mission in Halo when you find the Flood.
Finally, something about the Flood.
Yeah.
This map is covered with small cluster bases of Flood creatures. Mm-hmm. And our goal is to reach and rescue the Red Spartan team north of the map. Anders' signal is being jammed by a huge creature that it's really difficult to damage, but if we destroy the five colonies around the map, we can weaken it.
Yeah.
Destroy the five things to weaken the main thing.
Yeah. Flood buildings regenerate under most circumstances. So this is kind of an echo of the plasma wall mission, because you kind of need to keep a little force behind in order to shoot it when it pops back up.
Yeah. Yeah. You do this, you put together a ground army to clear the base around this colony. You advance northward. Hornets, again, an all-star flying around, taking out the colonies while they regenerate. Here, they're really good against that. Mm-hmm. But there are Flood enemies who are out in like great numbers. Yeah. Range, so you're overwhelmed initially.
Yeah. The biggest pain in fighting the Flood generally are their flying units. Probably called the Swarm or some shit.
They're not Hornet. We took that one, motherfuckers.
We took that. We claimed it. We're already on that domain.
Yeah. Hornet.flying.
Yeah. Human.going. Yeah.
Spartan.killing.
Yeah. And also they have buildings that are their own kind of turrets. It's basically like artillery. And this just fucking tears through anything you send at them.
Yeah. Real problem.
Yeah.
Here. Once you eventually beat this, we start a mission called Shield World. The mission names in this are horrible. So there's a large large Flood creatures down. We can connect to Anders' signal. She's being held captive by the Covenant leaders who aren't happy to learn of our presence. Nope. So they deploy a big fleet to attack the Spirit of Fire. And they start bringing it down with a force field generator. Our ship's in trouble. And this mission, we had to call back units to protect it, basically. We had to recall three squads back to the base for evac. And we have 18 minutes. Yeah. We can extend this time limit. We send Gremlin vehicles to EMP the field generators.
Yeah. I could not find more than the one to do this.
Oh, yeah.
They make it seem like this is a way, like, oh, you need to escort these gremlins there so they can disable them. I couldn't find them.
Oh, they're on the edges of the map.
Oh, okay.
On this. Like, they are, there's no, a thing that's missing in this game that's an RTS standard that could have been one of the Spirit of Fire's abilities is like a radar scan.
Yeah.
Show based on the fog of war. Mm-hmm. I end up really missing that because it is, as the difficulty in this game, this is true in most RTSs. This is a feature, not a bug. But as this game scales up in difficulty, it is harder to take time to scout.
Yeah,
because you are defending your base, you're making sure your base is proceeding, you're building up your army. Mm-hmm. Micromanaging it with somebody scouting is possible, because of the clever control scheme, but it's still difficult.
Yeah.
So there are certain missions, if it was rigorous enough, I would forego scouting just to be alive.
Yeah.
And it made finding this stuff kind of difficult. I ultimately ended up, finding it in this one, but it was a tension I felt.
Yeah. I mean, also time limit. Like, I ended up raw dogging this with 20 minutes, with only the one timeline expansion. But it's a lot to do.
It's a lot easier if you get the time extensions.
Yeah.
So this one was hard, but it wasn't so hard for me largely because I think I found those things.
Okay. Yeah. Like, you have to clear three flood bases, near these positions. You get some stuff from them after they fly. Like, one of them will give you an elephant. Others will give you upgraded, just a bunch of Marines. Like, Marine units will upgrade the more stuff they kill, get a little bit more durable. They have like star ratings. This is not really relied upon or explained what promoting a unit will do.
Yeah, just makes them tougher generally. They also have a nice upgrade tree, and at the height of it, they become ODSTs.
Yes.
Here. This is doing the opposite of the last mission. The last mission, you wanted Hornets. This is saying, oh, Hornets, you're going to get fucked if you use Hornets. Mm-hmm. This one's all about, vehicles.
Yeah.
Here. And anti-air vehicles.
Yeah.
Through this. So using this, you can kind of go from base to base, clear them out. Mm-hmm. It's hard, but you're using your top of the line shit.
Yeah. The key for this is the Wolverine anti-air ones, specifically to take out the swarm, which are a huge factor in this.
Yeah. The last unit, this one with the Spartans, is unable to evac when we get near it. We had to get them back to the base on foot, and we do it just in time for cleansing, which we are now doing a mission on the ship, which is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is, how do you describe this? It's RTS Luminous.
Yeah. That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah. The Spirit of Fire is being pulled beneath the surface of the planet, into a gigantic, Forerunner facility. We're going to find out that this is not a halo. This is, what if you took a halo and then rotated it? It's a hollow world.
Yes.
Yeah.
Down here. And boy, does the AI have a lot of things to say about that.
Yeah.
Trying this within a hollow planet. Good. Sounds like a fun afternoon. reboot.
Yeah. But the flood have infested the outside of the ship, and we need to stop them from taking care of it. And we need to finishing off the ship. We need to clean it off while also passing through these cleansing laser barriers. And protecting our units from those. It will kill our units, but it will also finish off and stop flood buildings from regenerating.
Yeah, that's where the luminous wave comes through in this.
Yes.
We're defending these airlocks. We also just buy unlimited units from these airlocks.
Yeah.
A little funny. Mm-hmm. We are on a, you know, and we have resource generators on our ship.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't we just have all the resources we have?
Yeah.
What is it generating in from where? Like on planets, they're airdropping them in.
Mm-hmm.
From somewhere. Again, but like, isn't this the place where they come from?
Just some guys carry them.
Yeah. I have no idea what is happening here semiotically.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, you have to kind of like do little like shuttle runs in this. You've got to, you know, defend the airlocks, but also take off the, you know, take out the flood buildings on the side. Right before the, you pass by a laser and then get everybody back inside, like shelter them.
Yeah. It's a cool idea. For mm-hmm. for a mission, it's a little does not feel like playing RTS very much to me.
Yeah,
but it's you know, it's creative after mm-hmm. this. Once you clear this out, we make the next mission, which has the absolutely exciting name Repairs.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what you do in this one? The Spirit of Fire launches out into the center of this hollow planet and runs into a Covenant flagship, like literally.
Mm-hmm.
And we go into the mission, which is, you know, similar kind of the last one. We're still on the ship doing ship stuff. We're protecting these Cyclops mechs we have as they repair the Spirit of Fire's energy core.
Yeah.
Enemy dropships are going to fly in and drop off units up and mm-hmm. down the ship. Yeah. Here, and we just have a lot of resources. We make a lot of units, yeah. and eventually you can make more Cyclopses, and mm-hmm. they're really good at repairing this thing, so it makes the job go faster.
Yeah.
You know, not a difficult mission.
No. You just have to defend them where they're at, but also stop the units from that are dropped at the far end of the ship from destroying your unit spawners.
Yeah. 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 And this brings us into the next mission after we get through this.
Beachhead.
Beachhead.
The Arbiter yanks Anders over to an orb mm-hmm. At the facility here and puts her hand on it. He's like, hey, you just just awakened the machines that will doom the human race. And then he says, a baffling line, let the deconstruction of our new gifts begin.
Huh? Didn't any of us expect you to say that.
Yeah.
Very strange
mm-hmm.
Through this. While others are kind of looking at the facility coming to life, Anders takes a risk, steps on a pad and says surface, and it happens to be voice activated with human voices,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Warps to the inner surface of this planet and is attacked by the flood.
Yes.
Three little flood goblins, very specifically, mm-hmm. blah, 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 and Forge shoots all of them once
mm-hmm.
Rescuing her. He just hit right place at the right time. It was my minor. So the mission is to destroy four Covenant bases and establish four of her own where they were.
Yeah.
And this one, we have more hero units. We have Forge, but we also have three badass Spartans.
Mm-hmm.
And they can basically take out the two first bases on their own.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you find an abandoned Scarab, which one of the Spartans can pilot. This will help you take out the third.
Yes. Yeah. Big power fantasy to get this. You know, the Scarab was once our enemies, but now we have Spartans and they can take over cars.
Yeah. And then the fourth one is like perched pretty high up, but by that point you have three bases generating resources. You can just build like this is when I started doing the vampires or whatever they are.
Yes.
Literally just the marine battle cruisers from StarCraft is what they are.
They do all the animals at the zoo get a ship name from elephant to vampire.
Yeah.
This opens us up into mission Reactor. Anders has a plan to deny the Covenant the planet's resources. You know, we can't save them, but we have to make sure nobody gets them.
Yeah.
We're going to blast the planet's sun reactor and make it go supernova. And the problem is this will leave the Spirit of Fire without a way home. The AI has a lot of snarky things to say about that.
Right.
The ship carrying the explosive core is shut down, so we have to carry it over land by dragging it with elephants. Mm-hmm. Straight up Fitzcarraldo shit.
Yep.
And our goal is to get it to a teleporter at the top of the mountain. The path has a bunch of switchbacks with Covenant bases at the mm-hmm. landings. We have to protect the core while we transport it. And if the elephant is destroyed, the core will roll back downhill.
Yeah.
I love the core. Just, dun, 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 it's
fine. Yeah. Like, everything's fine. It's fine. And this is just more momentum. You get more bases. Like this game has a really weird difficulty curve.
Yes.
Like right now, like we're kind of in stomp zone a little bit.
It wants us to feel the triumph of humanity
yeah
over these alien scum Mm-hmm. Like, it's all building up to the next mission and this cutscene. It's going to show us that it really, you know, is, people reload this cutscene up on YouTube on its own all the time.
Okay. Like,
it is a very well-loved cutscene.
Mm-hmm.
Well, people love to see the Spartans fight.
Yeah, you get to see Spartans fight, and then you get to see a regular human pull rank on them.
Yeah, and somehow succeed in the dumbest way possible.
Yeah.
So Forge is unloading the core, and an Arbiter is kind of hanging around. We keep seeing him because we can see Predator vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can see something that's kind of out of phase. He eventually uncloaks and attacks, and Forge leaves these rushing elites to the Spartans to fight, and for him to fight the Arbiter. Yeah. We get a lot of moves. The Spartans are doing a lot of, like, these elites are really dumb. Like, at one point, one of the Spartans grabs his shoulder and kind of adjusts him slightly to the side so he gets stabbed in the back by his own elite.
Yep.
Like, it's well-blocked action, but it does not... In trying to sell the Spartans as the coolest thing in the universe, it makes the elites not a threat.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe these are the things I had problems with. Why don't I just deploy three of these guys to Avengers the entire universe?
Yeah.
Because they can do anything.
But that's the Halo RTS or the Halo FPS games. Right? Yeah.
Like, and that's what they're doing, you know? And it just, it takes me out of it. Like, it's supposed to make me feel pumped.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm just like, I have no sense of the stakes of this. Mm-hmm. The Arbiter beats the shit out of Forge. There's one action beat in this I really like where Forge pins him down and the Arbiter knocks his gun out of his hand. So Forge pulls out a pistol and just holds it up against the Arbiter's hand and shoots his hand until he drops his gun.
Uh-huh.
Or drops his sword thing.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah.
That was a nice little, like, I like good action blocking.
Yes.
Through this.
Yeah. Good, very good direction in this.
Yeah.
And then, like, the Arbiter is shocked because, like, Forge sticks him in the neck.
It's stupider than that. The Arbiter is about to execute him, and Forge goes, "At least look me in the eye while you do it." Mm-hmm. And he goes, "Very well, human. My face will be the last thing you see." And just lets him look at him and did not expect Forge to stab him in the neck.
Yeah.
Like, this human clearly has no other weapons.
Mm-hmm.
I'm overconfident. That's my flaw.
Well, I like victory laps. Yeah,
exactly. It's very much so. So the Arbiter gets stabbed. It's not that the Arbiters don't behave like anything. They just behave like a generic human villain.
Yeah.
I want aliens to have flaws. I want to be able to see things from their perspective. But if they're just evil humans, there's no alienness happening.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same thing that would happen if this was an evil human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, faction in this.
Yeah. The only thing that behaves alienly is the Flood.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, because, and the other, and weirdly enough, the Covenant are a conglomeration of all aliens and none of them act. There's like two types of aliens, evil human and Jar Jar Binks.
Yep.
And that's it. Like, why?
Mm-hmm.
So the Arbiter is very shocked. He drops his super plasma sword thing and Forge kills him with it. Yeah. And then Forge goes, "Oh yeah." And he's like, you don't have that woman to save you. He's like, "If that wouldn't have been stepped in, I would have kicked your ass." No, you wouldn't have. You were almost going to die.
Yeah. Yeah. You're on the ropes, my bud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the core has been damaged. It's going to need to be detonated manually. And Forge won't let a Spartan do it, making it the third time he sacrificed himself for his soldiers.
Yeah.
And he goes up to handle this alone.
Yes.
And this is a big brawl.
Mm-hmm.
We have our forces, the Covenant, the Flood. There are Forerunner defenses. This is the big climax.
Yes. The Forerunners are just like floating drone things that will attack everybody is what they'll do. So like what you're trying to do is you're at one of the exits to the planet's surface. This thing is going to blow up, but the exit is guarded by a shield. We need to deactivate the shield by pressing the buttons in a particular way. There are six buttons. And you have to press the buttons in sequence, hit one and then hit the opposite of it.
This incredibly ancient, brilliant race came up with that as their puzzle.
Yeah.
For this very funny.
Mm-hmm.
We have developed lights out. I mean, it's not quite that, but like, I love an ancient precursor race of aliens that have supreme intelligence creating Towers of Annoy.
Yeah,
like that kind of shit.
this is interesting because like as you deactivate sectors of the shield, it goes away. It's no longer terrain. Like you can run across it at the start.
Yeah.
Then suddenly, like, okay, well, I need to like have this is timed. I need to have two armies kind of like go opposite each other. And that's what I did. Was just like, okay.
Yep. Which I like mechanically, right? Like when I'm making fun of this, I'm making fun of the idea that this is ancient technology and they
make it's a fun mission design. Yeah.
But the mission design is good. Like Ensemble knows what they're doing. You know, as we're working through, the west side of this is all Covenant, and the east side is all Flood. Mm-hmm. Stay out of the west side. Cookie Covenant is queen of the west Covenant. Side. Yeah. Covenant Quan. Uh-huh. The Forerunners kind of fly over the center.
Yeah.
And we have 30 minutes to do this until Forge detonates the core.
Yeah.
Once he does, the gravity of the overloading sun is too strong for us to leave directly. But Cutter says, what if we do a slingshot maneuver above around the sun? Mm-hmm. And Serena goes, inside a plant doing a slingshot maneuver through an exploding star. Not a bad job for Tuesday. and we decide not to put her into cryostasis.
Yeah, yeah.
She just talks to you the entire time you're in cryostasis.
Mm-hmm.
Is the weather getting colder or is it just you? And just kind of says shit like that for eternity. It lasts a million years.
Yeah, yeah. Slowly going insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a 1 year in cryo with Serena feels like
I think that's how marathon happened.
Yeah, yeah. Like we made our AIs and the biggest mistake we've ever made in our life. Like AI sucks now and it's annoying, but it's an entirely a different way.
Mm-hmm.
This is almost prescient, but it's totally off base in the way that AI is annoying.
Right.
So Forge detonates the core here, and then we make it out. We cut to 2 weeks later. The Covenant hasn't shown up again. I love this. Cutter is ordering Anders to go into cryosleep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's like, I still want to monitor things. She goes, it's been 2 weeks and they haven't done anything. 2 weeks is not that long.
Yeah, no.
And he goes, and we all made it. We're safe. Let's get some rest. And she goes, not all of us made it. As her thing is closing, just to leave him with that thought as she goes into cryosleep.
Uh-huh.
It's not his fault.
No.
Cutter is the most passive motherfucker in this whole game. Like, he didn't do it.
He let the game happen.
Yeah. And the game ends with Cutter closing Forge's empty cryosleep pod. He's made a noble, heroic sacrifice because Marines are noble.
Mm-hmm.
And we should love them. If you beat the entire game on super hard mode, Serena wakes you up and says, something has happened.
Cool.
My quoting,
uh-huh.
Something has happened is the cliffhanger.
It's less specific.
Then somehow Palpatine has returned.
Yeah.
It's the least specific, like an incident has evented.
Yeah. It's less specific than the cliffhanger ending to the Mario movie.
Yeah.
The first one. Yeah.
You got to go back. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
That's what they did. And that's the end of the game. This game is more or less a snack to play. It mm-hmm. is too on rails for me, and it made me want to play a proper RTS.
Yeah.
I cannot say that this is not really impressive as a work of adaptation.
Yeah.
Like, I don't actually like this as a game. It wasn't hell to pay mm-hmm. or play or anything like that. It wasn't like miserable. I don't like it. I'll never play it again.
Yeah.
But it is impressive to me as somebody who likes looking at game design.
Yeah. This is the closest that I've gotten to enjoying, like, you know, the micromanaging of like an individual battle. And that's because they're small.
Yeah.
You know, like the, like that, that, that is what this gave me. The simplification of this, you know, made it so that I felt like I had any input at all into how the matchups went. And that's a feat, you know. I had a good time with this. I'm, you know, curious about the second one, but there's like no way to get it without that. I'm just not going to do that. I'll play a different thing instead. You know, look for another RTS with smaller battles.
Yeah.
But like, it is super impressive what they did. They took a problem that had been a problem for, you know, two decades at that point and made something cool while trying to solve it.
It's been a problem. There isn't like a wealth of Herzog's Y-likes.
Yes.
Like, it is a problem that has been solved. It just hasn't been solved in a way that pushed through to the mainstream and with a property everyone loved.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
On a system everyone loved. Like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of innovation here. It's just, it's not trailblazing innovation.
Yeah.
It's refinement, you know, and refinement is still worthy. It's still cool.
Yeah. Refinement's valuable. This is still a dancing bear.
Yeah.
Right.
I kind of think so.
Yeah.
You know, and I just, and again, I know I hammered it a lot. I don't get Halo. I don't understand what is useful or interesting about this universe, even a little mm-hmm. bit.
I sent you a link to the, Halopedia page for the Spirit of Fire.
Yeah. what do we learn about the Spirit of Fire?
Too much.
Why is this like 40,000 words? That's a lot.
Yeah, I was just like, is this like a thing from the main games? And I looked it up, you know, does the Spirit of Fire appear? Undetermined. Yeah, undetermined if it appears.
Seems like the first thing you'd maybe find out, but it's not a thing on this.
No.
Maybe it's in one of the books. Mm-hmm. I believe people that if, you know, this can be somebody's circus and they love this kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's fine with me. Mm-hmm. As somebody who doesn't get it, that definitely played a factor in this leaving me a little cold.
Yeah.
And my favorite version of the small battle feeling is Warcraft 3 choosing units to back up a hero unit who you directly control.
Yeah. Yeah.
That feels, with a series of cooldown abilities and equipment, that feels like small battles to me because I'm really only paying attention to one dude.
Yeah.
Through that. And that really works for me.
Yeah.
I was missing that. There's a little bit of that, but the fact that your hero unit in the campaign is a vehicle that you have access to elsewise, it isn't truly a new unit and it has one special ability.
Yeah.
Made that feel a little simpler than I needed it to.
Yeah.
For me.
I'm led to believe that, like, if I want this kind of thing, I need to play, like, Company of Heroes or Warhammer Dawn of War.
Yeah.
Something like that. But I
can't. Company of Heroes has even less riz in terms of the story than this.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
this did make me curious about that Battle for Middle Earth thing, because I'm not, like, a huge Lord of the Rings thing, but maybe putting it into a tactical space is what would make me think it was cool.
Yeah.
You know? Glad that we did it. We haven't done anything like it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's always valuable.
Thank you so much, Stephen.
Big thanks to Stephen.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this and you're any kind of oppressed person and you have a project or product you'd like us to shout out, please send me an email at gary@duckfeedtv. Include all pertinent information. We'd be happy to do it. Been a minute since we've had one. So if you got something, send it up.
Yeah.
If you have thoughts about Halo Wars, by the time you hear this, it is too late, I think, by one day.
It is. Yeah.
It's too late. But if you have, generally, just keep in mind for the future, the deadline's always the 15th. It's always duckfeed.tv/contact. It's always specific entries for specific games and brief and specific, please.
Yes. Games that we're talking about in May are The Last Spell, RimWorld, and Rage is our premium episode. And the deadline there is May the 15th, duckfeed.tv/contact.
Yeah, very excited about those.
Yeah.
If you want to get the premium episodes we have, the next episode this month is Resident Evil Requiem. That's going to be a banger episode.
Mm-hmm.
You and I both, it is the closest, other than From Software, the biggest center of our shared Venn diagrams is Resident Evil. We both love talking about Resident Evil. Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting game. It's really fun to talk about. And then next month it's Rage, as we mentioned. To get those, you have to be a patron. Go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv, join the duck level, and you get that episode and all the back ones. And there's so many bangers in there, work we've done that I'm really proud of that I think you will like.
Yes.
If you like the show, I think you will like those episodes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good value.
Yeah. You also get like whole other bonus shows.
Which
Hours.
Really good.
Yeah, Realich Hours. Like we're talking about Planescape Torment. It rules. Unfilmable. We started doing two of those episodes a month. I think we're doing great work there.
Yeah, they're really fun. Good episodes. We think it's worth your money. You can also sponsor an Unfilmable now. That's in our store. So if there's a horror movie you've really wanted us to talk about, you can be that change.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the world. In addition to those things, you can also rate and review us. You can subscribe on your podcast directory of choice. You can talk about us on message boards and Reddit and things like that. Spread the word. We don't advertise. So that's how other people learn about us.
Yeah.
That's what you like. And you can join us and thank you, our producer, Gwen.
Thank you, Gwen.
Huge thanks to Gwen.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gwen's great. What should they watch out for until next time?
Watch out for the Duck Feed flagship, the anniversary of talking.
Anniversary of talking. I'll let you do it, but if one thing goes wrong, I'm pulling you out.